This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 3rd of December 1963. The title of this lecture is Certifications and Classifications. This tape is 83 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Well, I'm glad you're still alive. Report I've gotten on your auditing lately, I wonder, but that's... I wonder. You must have done something terrible to look that guilty when I said that. All right, what's the date here? What's the date? 3 December, AD 13, St. Hill Special Briefing Course. We have a lecture here on these new certificate and classification changes and so on. Give you the rundown on this. You might be quite interested in this. Tomorrow, we will get a demonstration of a session that I taped. I'm finding a PTGPM, and I will go over that with you over TV. But today, I want to talk to you about some administrative matters which also have bearing on technical. All right. Now, you have received or about to see HCO policy letter of November 26, 1963, which is probably be the first of many policy letters on this particular subject, but which lays out the basic format of classification and auditing requirements for individuals. First, I'd like to give you the the Scientology Zero on this, of why is this done? Why is this done? We have to go back, in actual fact here, more than 13 years to the original activity which sent Dianetics forward in the community and in the society. The original method of dissemination, which was intensely and extremely successful, was simply getting some chaps around who, quote, wanted to be audited, who, quote, had troubles, and so forth, and giving them some training, supervised their co-audit, and took money from them only for those sessions which were patch-up sessions, and a nominal amount of money for supervising their co-auditing. That was actually the first method of dissemination. Along with this went a hectographed edition of the original thesis, which was the only textbook at that particular time, 1949. And the textbook was actually not sold, but was distributed by somebody making a mimeograph copy of it and giving it to his friends. And I don't know how far that book went, and I don't know but what it isn't still going today. Of course, we would never hear of it because all the addresses are closed on the lines and so forth. That was the original thesis. Now, the system there, and this was me operating, you understand? The system there was simply to get Joe and Bill and Pete, who wanted processing, had heard of this new thing and were interested in it. And my statement, well, if you want some, then you had better put the nose to the grindstone and study this over a little bit, and I'll show you how to do this, and then you three can form up a co-audit of various lines and so forth, and you make sure that you're here every weekend, and we straighten all this out for you. And then their complaints about Peach, you see, who at this time was flubbing a little bit. He wasn't giving as much auditing as he was getting, you see, and that sort of thing. And somebody's effort then to get somebody else into this unit, and the unit was up to 6 or 8 before you could sneeze, don't you see? And finally somebody came along who was as clumsy as Pete to get paired off with Pete, don't you see? And this sort of thing was carried forward. In actual fact, although the auditing was terribly clumsy, and we didn't have the technology which we have today, no shadow of it practically, although the auditing was terribly clumsy, some rather fantastic things occurred with cases. Now, when they'd get too bogged down, one of these teams would get too bogged down or something like that, well, of course, they'd call on me to give them a session, so I'd sell them a session. And actually, I don't think I ever really took any money off of them, but they used to push money at me and so forth, because I was not at that particular time interested in any income. But I know there was money there, and on several different occasions, I had to turn down $800 and $1,500, and if you will just audit me straight through to clear now and do nothing else so I don't have to co-audit, I will give you $3,000. And my saying, well, you can just put it back in your pocket because you're just getting along fine with Joe, and you just make up your mind to keep going. You get this kind of an approach. Very successful, extremely successful. Well, when the foundations were formed, they were formed not at my instigation, but it all seemed like a good idea, good roads and good weathers, and they got into a big organizational this, that, and the other thing, and there were an awful lot of people in charge. And I guess there were more bosses around there than you could easily count. And there were many different schools of technology operating. I remember old Joe Winter going around telling everybody that you had to believe in it for it to work. Auditing, there was nothing scientific about auditing. Actually, it was merely an art. You know, this is all fine. That was dear old Joe. This kind of thing, don't you see? You give a lecture, and then you would find out that that didn't apply to what the session was going on immediately afterwards. Well, they started training on the basis of just letting somebody hang around for a month to see what was going on. That was the first training course. And Parker, I think, dreamed that up, and old Parker said, I remember coming down one morning, and Parker said to me, well, these people keep walking up to the front door. They want to be trained. So I finally arranged for this to happen, and I charge them $500 to hang around. pretty wild. But the academy developed out of that particular activity. That first group, by the way, was a group of 10 auditors. They were pretty well trained, but they were trained to audit others, and they were not trained particularly to co-audit. I remember teaching them all straight wire, how to pick up psychosomatics and so forth off people, and most of those fellows could do it. The auditing was clever rather than otherwise. Auditors of that day were not badly trained. But along with this came the same fault that the individual auditor runs into, and that is people wanted processing. And they wanted processing exclusively and only. They didn't want to audit anybody. They wanted to be processed. Now, let me call this to your attention as a very terrible and destructive action. Let me call this to your attention in that wise. Now, we've always thought of this as that's a good thing. He wants processing. And I suddenly tell you that that's a destructive action. Ha ha. Let me make my point. Now, supposing I'd taken this fellow's $3,000 and I neglected the rest of the group and I just sat down and audited this fellow day and night. Supposing I had done that. Well, what would have happened to the rest of the group? I can see an individual now, an HCA, something like that. And he's developed himself a group of 10 or 12, and he's got these people going forward very nicely. And all of a sudden, Mrs. Gottbucks from Poughkeepsie shows up and flashes a lot of green under his nose, and he sits down to grind it out and so forth and earn this money. He's going along all right, but then her husband gets orders to Saigon or something of the sort, and she disappears out of his perimeter. What is he immediately and instantly at that moment confronting? He has dropped all of his dissemination. He's dropped this group. He's not paying attention to the eager beavers that wanted to outflow this stuff. He's paying attention just to somebody that wanted to inflow it and nothing else. He didn't get any dissemination in the area, then did he? He neglected the fellows who were keeping it whizzing. And the net result is when her husband gets orders to Saigon, there goes his, quote, practice, unquote. And that is the end of that. See? So he says then, well, I've got a failure on my hands. I'm not doing well as an auditor. Actually, it was not a failure as an auditor. It was a failure in dissemination because he didn't use his best dissemination activities in order to keep himself going. That is to say, he wasn't taking people and making them co-audit and making them help each other and supervising it and making income off of this action and making income also on the inevitable patch-up sessions. Now, let me assure you that if you want lots of processing to do, you'll get lots of co-auditing going. Let me make that point with an exclamation point. You actually don't get any auditing to amount to anything if a co-auditing activity isn't going. As soon as a co-auditing activity ceases, and as soon as the individual swings in on just auditing one person, everything he's doing goes up in smoke. Aha, but the central organizations of 1950 made that mistake, although they had lots of students, and so forth. They went into the processing business. And everybody they processed, who wanted only processing and who didn't want to give anything for it, introverted. And you get this, the pre-clear doesn't disseminate. The purely pre-clear person doesn't disseminate, ever. You take this old boy's long, arduous experience in this particular field. Man, you cured this guy's migraine spoozix, you know? And he can actually now do 15 chin-ups, you see? And everything is marvelous, you see? And you say, well, isn't that interesting? Therefore, one of his family members or somebody like that ought to come over and get some processing. That is the fond hope that you might have in this particular direction. But his family members rarely appear. Or sometimes. Why? That person never mentions it. That is about the wildest thing. If you've done something wrong to them, though, they mention it. But that is the phenomenon, this is forced on us in a technical capacity, that's the phenomenon of negative gain. That he has had lumbosis has no bearing on the situation. It's now gone, so it doesn't worry him, and if you've done a thorough job of erasing it, he never mentions it. Because it's gone, negative gain. Everything you do with a case is negative gain. It's the eradication of something wrong. And if it's eradicated properly, of course the fellow then never has anything to say about it. He just feels better and everything is going along. So that purely processing activities over the vast span of years have produced, they of course have produced some, but they have produced minimal dissemination. And just as the individual auditor, just as the individual auditor who formed up a few people and he had them co-auditing, you see, you don't have to have a big dress parade situation. There's this fellow down at the garage, and then there's a librarian, and then there's somebody who teaches in the kindergarten, and that's a perfectly representative group, because if they start co-auditing, you're going to have two or three more drift in, and then some of those fellows are going to drift out, and then you're going to get some more in. Your group has a gradual, even growth and tends to maintain itself, unless you suddenly withdraw all your attention from that group and put it on one pre-clear or two pre-clears. Do you see? All right, just as a fellow breaks his practice to pieces by knocking down his dissemination activities, in that fashion, see, concentrating it on a pre-clear who rarely disseminates. People who co-audit disseminate. Right? A central organization can do the same thing. They get so interested in their HGC income, they never bother to make any Scientologists. I shouldn't do this because this has nothing whatsoever to do with it. It's on a line that was a privileged line, and it's all very secret. But in a sock sec very recently, reading the first info letter, which inferred that HGCs would be cut out, it just inferred this, don't you think, was holding his head in his hands. How was he going to keep his organization running if he didn't have an HGC? Because his HGC was his mainstay. His HGC was his main income. And he was suddenly confronting the problem of how was he going to keep his finances up? How was he going to keep anything going at all? Because it seemed to be so terrible, because his student income was so low. You see, a central organization can do the exact same thing that a private auditor can do. Now look, if a central organization really crowded it on. We tried to do this down in Los Angeles, and they never got the word. It's a city over on the Pacific coast of country on the other side of the Atlantic. They never got the word. I tried to give them outside private processing activities, you see. Well, let me assure you that in the absence of these things, you get minimal PCs, too. There is just nothing like a good, broad, brawling co-audit activities going on all over the place, regardless of how hard it was to promote them or how hard to keep them in line or how many phone calls. These are quite wild to handle. They sort of discourage you from handling them. You've got a phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning. The guy can't end his session, don't you see? And so forth. What do I do? Various processes in the old days. I've had some remarkable phone calls at some remarkable hours of the night. One of the most remarkable is one time they couldn't get a pre-clear down off the ceiling of the room, and there were four pro auditors present, and she had exteriorized and splatted up against the ceiling, and they couldn't get her off the ceiling. And so they held the telephone to her ear, and I talked her off the ceiling back into her body. So I will agree that the randomity of this type of activity is considerable. You can't sit back in an ivory tower with a lot of co-auditing going on. And some of the most remarkable goofs occur. They're incredible. They're unbelievable. But you do a sort of a D of P action on these things. You keep them going one way or the other. You try to hold it down. But those people will get themselves wrapped around telegraph poles if you're speaking in terms of purely commercial auditing, see? And a central organization would have three times the PCs. If they had 1,000 co-audit teams running in that part of the state, they'd have three times the PCs. Just casualty rate. Have to straighten them up, you know? I know that's awfully cold-blooded, but it happens to be if people are going to say, well, we mustn't disseminate or co-audit because it's going to hurt the income of the organization. See, well, let's counter with this cold-blooded inactivity. What do you mean, the income of the organization? You got to have co-audit teams going to create enough casualties to keep you solvent. You'll find as a private auditor that you're always being called on for emergency and people forget to pay you for this sort of thing and that sort of thing. But you give them a good understanding that if you have to give them a sys or put somebody together, give them special sessions, so forth, the rate is so-and-so. You'll still come out all right with it, as long as you've got co-auditing going. Unless a man... You see, there are tremendous technical data associated with this. We're now speaking from the security of... And this whole policy letter, by the way, is erected from the security of technical information. It's the technology rounded out, completed to OT, that is making it possible now to lay down these various lines and say about what the score is, because it's forced off on us like this. You'll find that the individual who is engaged in helping somebody else while he is being helped gets extroverted and introverted with regard to his case. The extroverts and introverts. You get somebody being audited during the week. All week long, this person is being audited. And you'll find out they're very introverted during that week. It's all what they're doing and so forth. It's very hard on the auditor meeting them at lunch, you know. They sit there and continue the session, you know. That's right. Next week, first day or so, they don't really see how they can make it. See, they got to put their attention now on somebody else. They got to pay for it. They got to help somebody else. An awareness of another being takes place at this particular line, and they start extroverting. And along about Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and so forth, they're so extroverted that it's not terribly vital. They're not going to die in the next 5 minutes if they don't get audited, you see. Of course, it can occur that something has gone wrong in their session, that they've been wrapped around a telegraph pole, nobody patched it up, left an ARC break. But a normal course of existence is that they're, by Wednesday of their processing activity, are in a rather extroverted frame of mind with regard to their case, don't you see? You've got an extroversion taking place here. They're looking outward. When they get audited, they look inward. When they audit, they look outward. And you've got out and in with regard to cases, and you've got an understanding of life going forward, and for the first time, it gets off the first dynamic and starts moving up onto the higher dynamics. And life is an activity of multiple dynamics, not an activity of the first dynamic. So technically, the individual is in a far better frame of mind with regard to life when he is doing some auditing and getting audited as an activity. This is by actual experience on the thing. I think it agrees with your own experience along this line. Even though it's very tough sometimes to bail out when you're in the middle of something and then audit somebody else. Now, the next point here, however, is that an individual can only progress so far without an increase of understanding. Now, previously, we said it was a good thing if somebody was clear to become OT that he should be trained. Well, that's totally reversed now. Should be a good thing. No. There's nothing like that. He'll never make it unless he's trained. Now, you can talk all you want to about the Scientologist being a rough case and so forth. No, he's just being run on rougher things. That's about all. You couldn't get anybody else to run on this thing. Of course, the fat, the amount of charge that exists on the case that can be bled off easily, starts getting bled off by the very easy processes. Now, let's take a look at the schedule of processing here. Very easy process. This listen style, the guy discusses his PTP and he feels better about it, see? See, lots of fat there. And you can bleed charge off like mad. But you have to do it more expertly after a while. And it requires a repetitive process, or the CCHs, or a straight wire, or overt withholds, or something like that to pick him up. Why? You're coming to the bones of the case. Now, of course, this fellow in his original state, to the amount of better off he is in comparison to how bad off he is. And of course, he's just a walking lightning bolt as far as charge is concerned. He's just fat with charge, and he is so bad off that bleeding any charge on the case at all makes him better. But what is better? See? He doesn't scream with his headache. You see? It's a betterment in relationship to the worsement that the case is in, don't you see? All right, well, we have this fellow feeling pretty good here at level two, and it takes repetitive processes, of which there were innumerable wordings and processes. It takes something like that to bite, but it takes a different kind of auditing. This guy can no longer wind up, and I notice some of you characters doing that this day. You think this character is going to go forever on a self-audit called ITSA. And so forth. No, I ain't going to do it. That's not going to happen, see? Now it takes formal auditing. Do birds fly, see? Recall a wreck. Thank you. It takes the impingement, the pound, don't you see? It takes the auditing cycle completely completed without cutting the PC's ITSA line when he is talking, but then not sitting back and making him make up things to talk about. You get the idea? You differentiate between a PC who hasn't anything to talk about and a PC who is answering your question, you see? He's completed answering your question. All right, that's the time to give him the cheery thank you and bear along. Well, that requires a little greater sensitivity. Well, that's a hammer pound of auditing cycle is going forward here. And he'll make, frankly, as much progress as he gets commands per unit of auditing time. That's old. He makes as much progress as he gets commands per unit of auditing time. He gets a command every 3 minutes. He will make a command every 3 minutes worth of TA. See? He gets a command every minute. He will make a command every minute worth of TA. Now, this carries out at the highest OT processes. I'll tell you this because this is actually a piece of a fantastic amounts of TA and action and so forth. But the session I ran last night got the PT GPM, which had 16 items in it, found the goal of it, and got all 16 items and got it joined into the rest of the bank. The thing was found to exist after several banks had been run below it, don't you see, which is quite an ordinary circumstance. Did that in 3 hours. Found the goal, PTGPM, its top terminal, ran the rest of the items out of it, got it all flat, completely bled of charge, with complete accuracy, and so forth, in 3 hours, with 175 divisions of TA. Now, there's a lot of TA. Now, how? You're going to hear some of this tape tomorrow, by the way. Not for any particular, not for the technology in this particular instance, but for the ITSA, the handling of ITSA. Because ITSA has to be perfectly handled in order to handle those levels of TA. You have to handle ITSA perfectly to do these OT processes. You have to handle your basic auditing has to be absolutely, well, practically flawless if you're really going to fly. But it's actually the number of items that you find per unit of auditing time that gives you the TA. You know, if you just sit there and let that TA drift about, and it sits there a while motionless, and you think, well, maybe the PC will cognite or say something now that'll give you a little more TA, and you better not talk because the TA might move again, and all of this sort of stuff, that's preying on your mind, you're going to get the next item you haven't found yet starts to blow. And your TA is coming from the next unfound item, and your PC is going to get very unhappy. In other words, you just come right up on top of this thing and start driving your audit and session, and it's a hard drive, don't you see? You're not talking when the TA is actually moving a lot. See? That first blowdown that you get, you're not saying a word during that blowdown. See? The moment that thing seems to steady down, you're right in there with the next question that is going to kick the TA again, you see, the courtesy steps, you know. And then as soon as you say, get the answer to how does that relate to this GPM, the moment that you get the answer to this, which gives you a brrr surge, you don't care whether the TA is moving or not, because you know right now that any further motion of that TA is going to come from the next item. You get your question in there quick. Well, now that's very refined, very fantastically closely timed auditing. The way you achieve that sort of thing is just work real hard at basic auditing on lower levels. Make your basic auditing practically flawless. Promote the ITSA of the TA. Never sit around and get ITSA that you didn't promote, don't you see? And handle that. It's like driving a 16-horse team at a dead run when you get up to OT, but it's fairly easy to do it at this level too, because the repetitive process is very simple. PC has answered it. PC has answered it. Give them the next question, see? Bang, you're not waiting around there for something else. You don't sit there for 3 minutes hoping then the PC is finished talking and afraid that the PC is going to, because the fact that you're sitting there motionless is biting the PC's itza, don't you see? So the PC always will say something else, but it won't be germane, and the PC has no auditing question to answer, so therefore the PC goes on to self-audit. And you no longer have an auditing session. That's how you destroy it, with these silences. They can drive your PC mad and your session down the drain. They can throw your TA completely away. So it takes, when we get to level two, the guy by wandering around bleeding charge is no longer able to to produce TA. So we got to pound it out of him now. So we say, all right, repetitive process, however many old repetitive processes there were, don't you know? Bang goes your question. Good impingement, you know? And the PC said, ooh, well, we don't care how long it took him to answer. We're going to wait till he answers the question. And we're going to make sure that we knew what he answered, too. We're not going to be interested in, yes, I recalled one. Well, yes, I recalled one. If he answers that way, you also want to know what he recalled, don't you think? So you get your questions answered, but as soon as you got that question answered, and he has answered it, you know he's answered it, you feed him the next question, you see? Bang, there you are again, you know? You keep ending off that cycle, starting the new cycle, ending off that cycle, starting the new cycle, without actually cutting his itza. This is very smooth auditing indeed, but it requires very professional training. A guy has to get very good to handle this sort of thing, but it's enough at an auditor at level 2 to handle that sort of thing. All right, well, we've got this guy now. He's bled lots of charts. He's gotten to a point where he doesn't think a lion is going to spring at him when he goes down to the post box. He's had a lot of wins one way or the other. He finds he doesn't have to scream at his wife. He finds out the kids make him just as nervous as they always did, but he doesn't have to comment on it now, you see. He can suppress it. He's had a lot of wins of one kind or another, but life is livable. He doesn't find he's living at that same level of anxiety that he was before. He's still got a lot of that sort of thing. Well, that's fine. Is he going to get any better? Is he going to get any better? Well, yeah, he's going to get better when he's on prep checking and metered processes and assessing and running ARC breaks and that sort of thing. That's his next logical step forward. And you'd be surprised what you can do for somebody if you can really gun them up into running ARC breaks. But look at the level of technology. This guy has to be sharper in attack. He has to be actually trained to do R2H. He has to be able to spot this and that. He recognizes that it's bypass charge. He recognizes he spots the earlier bypass charge. Well, you would try to run that on somebody down here at level 1, the guy would just drift. You've heard them. You've audited people at this level, and you've been surprised at how much they drifted and so on. Well, actually, what you were asking them wasn't real to them. You weren't then making the case progress you thought you were making. See, you've had the idea, perhaps, that the higher the process, the more it would do for the case. See? Well, the process that does the most for the case is the process that is realest to the case at his state of case. It's merely what's real to him. That's all. That's quite a remarkable revision of look, don't you see? That's a technical revision of look. He'll get the most gains on the process that is most real. And the further his case is away from optimum, why, the more insignificant, tiny little things are real, and the more rough and tough things are unreal. Why, you say to this fellow, we were actually running people over their heads in 1950. We were saying, well, it's this engram. If we just run out this engram, why, you'll be all right. People understand that pretty well, by the way. They respond pretty well. But there was person after person. Couldn't run an engram. Couldn't even come close to an engram. Couldn't confront anything about engrams. And yet those people responded beautifully to little straight wire processes and so forth. I've seen a guy run from total insanity straight on up to a mild neurosis, just asking him 4 times he'd communicated. Interesting. There was no other auditing command used. It was just a repetitive process. It was real to him that he had communicated. See? As simple as that. Now, this guy doesn't have to be insane to get a win on such a process. But when he was first doing that process, it was already over his head. Communicated. And the knot of comm lag and upset of trying to figure out if he had communicated or if he'd never had communicated or what was communicating was quite pathetic to observe. Process was already over his head. Should have taken the CCHs, don't you see? That would have undercut that beautifully, and it could have cut up into these upper processes. But nevertheless, person couldn't run an engram, yet he could make a marvelous case gain on just recalling times he communicated, don't you see? Now, in any case, profits to some degree from this. But these cases back here on these lower levels only profit from that, don't you see? They're hung up at this state of beingness. They're hung up at this level of action. They don't know enough about the mind. Now, you're going to take this person here at level 3, and you're doing prep checking. You're going to say, what is the biggest changes that you have made in your life? You know, the decisions you have made to change. We're going to assess all those and so forth. Oh, the person will come quite along well and so forth. You'd be surprised every once in a while you're going to get a PC who shouldn't be running at that level, but running at a lower level. Decisions he's made in his lifetime, eh? I don't think I'm going to say it. Well, you're not getting your assessment list. Well, why aren't you getting your assessment list? You're just running the PC over his head. PC is not capable of deciding, taking responsibility for ever having made a decision to change, don't you see? Well, that's back down in the repetitive process, as you might get something like that. You might get a concept run. Get the idea of deciding to change, get the idea of not, of deciding not to change. See? Get the idea of deciding, get the idea of not deciding. You know, those old concept process. And all of a sudden he has this red lightning bolt of cognition on the thing. And you know, I've made a decision in my lifetime. Gee, no wonder. I don't trust myself to make decisions, but you know, I really have made a decision. Well, then you might be able to run a prep check process. All right, well, now we take somebody who can get off his ARC brakes. It's a very educated level of process. He has to understand a lot of factors of life before he gets into this. Otherwise, he's looking at so many ramifications of what you're asking him that his mind can't settle on any one of them. There's just too much charge in his road. All right, now let's get into such a fantastically esoteric thing as a service facsimile. Have you actually any idea of what that requires of a PC? What does that really require of him? It requires that he take enough responsibility so that he actually is keeping himself sick so as to make somebody else wrong. He has to take over the responsibility of his own illness. Now, let me tell you, that is asking the impossible for lower level cases. You say to this fellow, well, now, what did you do to make your mother wrong? What sickness did you give yourself in order to make your mother wrong? We don't care what question was, but this concept is given to this person. This person's liable to fly off in a mad state and tell you, that wasn't the case. That wasn't the case. Actually, she's very mean to me. Oh, very mean. Very, very bad to me. She used to tell all kinds of lies to my father so he would beat me. And my father, you know, he beat me incessantly. This is your approach in an effort to get responsibility for a service facsimile. Look at your level of jump. I was horrified in 1954 when I asked around about full responsibility, the idea of a person taking full responsibility. You know, I saw people around who actually had had some case wins and that sort of thing, who were in a state of collapse, if you please, on the subject. Take full responsibility for my life. Oh, no. Actually, his old Advanced Procedures and Axioms, I think that's in there. The Handbook for Preachers, one of the other Advanced Procedures and Axioms. And when that book was published, why, we made lots of people who knew we were wrong. Yeah, we were wrong. You couldn't take responsibility. Not only could you not take full responsibility, but of course it was impossible to take any responsibility in any direction. Now, what had happened there is that research had progressed forward on the subject of levels of case. And the dominant level of case at that particular time, 1954, 55, were getting up a little bit to a point where they could take some responsibility. So people close in who had had a lot of fairly good processing up to that time were perfectly willing to accept this as a concept and an idea. But people who had not been processed in that particular direction or up that high weren't. you get the make and break point then of how far you can advance with a statement or a technology or a thought or an idea. And you get things like ARC break assessments, getting somebody to sit still even though he's ARC broken and so forth and go into it. You can't do auditing on somebody who's too badly ARC broke who has no understanding of it at all. You're running a high-level process here anyway. You got programming cases and you got missed withholds. Well, it's very rough pulling missed withholds as different than OW. This, again, requires an enormously high level of responsibility in order to respond to it. OW, you'd be surprised at what you normally get on the man in the street running OW. What have you done? Well, I sat for a while. The level of responsibility makes you want to saw in and say, well, what have you done, man? Done, you know, done. There's no sense pushing it. That's what he has done. And what has he withheld? Well, he withheld getting up. That would be your level of responsibility. No idea of interpersonal relationships at all. Let's move up a little bit higher here, and we get implants, engrams, whole track case analysis. Well, very few people walking out on the street right now have any idea of themselves as spiritual being. Very few. As a matter of fact, they buy meat body philosophies very easily. Treatment, saw off my arm. It is sick, you know? Well, this kind of nonsense that goes on, this guy doesn't have any idea of himself as a spirit, much less as a spirit who has an eternity to live through, you see. Have no such concepts. Who has he been? Where has he been? And so forth. You'll find out in that level itself, they normally take off into past lives since Roman days. They may get back into Greece, don't you see? They work real hard where they'll push it back maybe to Egypt. And they're sticking up at the early part of this run. They're up here in the last 2,500 years, quite ordinarily. They talk quite happily, ordinarily, of having had a bad time in a castle that burned down over in France 200 years ago, you see. This is whole track. Ha! But that is nevertheless the approach to the situation. I know these things. I've been through them myself. But that suddenly starts to get real. And after a while, you say, you know, I've been somebody else, and it gets to be a fairly good level of reality on this particular basis. Well, that's a far cry from actual whole track, and yet that is a gradient entrance into it. Guy gets some kind of reality. He has pictures on these things, so they must have happened to him, you know, that kind of thing. He gets a little feeling of reality on it. It moves up just a little bit further to a point where he might possibly have had a higher longevity. He might possibly have had a higher state of beingness at one time or another, not a meat body state. He moves up into higher levels of things that have happened to him at one way or the other. These things all increase in reality to the degree that he sheds charge off his case. Well, in the final run of it, he gets up to a fairly comprehensive idea of what he's been and done. This ebbs and flows, the reality on it gets great and falls away and so forth, because he's falling all over his actual GPMs as he passes down the track and so on. He nevertheless gets himself one god-awful amount of time blocked out. Oh, some terrific amount of time blocked out. He gets up to trillions to the eighth power. Time, you know. Oh, man, he's time, you see. First he gets horrified, you see, the idea of 12 trillion years ago or something like that. But he gets finally up to a point where trillions to the eighth power take him back to some of the earliest implants. And he's perfectly happy at this level if there's an awful lot of track. Well, when he moves up into level 7, he finds out that one GPM will cover from trillions 29 forward to trillions 21. One GPM. Of course, that span of time is almost fantastic, because that's much more span of time than the whole span of time back to the earliest implants you can dig up on this guy, and that's just one GPM. Now his track goes sizzling back to trillions to the 200th power. Well, that's of course one of these ridiculous figures. That's trillion written 200 times. Or one with 200 times you write all the ciphers of a trillion. That gets to be quite a few ciphers, and every one of those things is a year. You're getting into the sweep of time by this time. Well, I myself I just thought I was doing fine when I was doing some research this last summer. I said, gee, you know, we're going to clear back here. Trillions four, you know, dizzying concepts of time, trying to date one of these confounded things, you know, trying to handle these fantastic periods of time with arithmetic and trying to dream up other methods of going into all this. Rough. Because it just took the auditor too long to say anything, so you got crude, rough approximations like trillions, 4.5. Okay. Some comprehension of this, kind of gradually making it one way or the other. Now, in GPMs, you don't have to worry about the time of an actual GPM. It just is, and you don't have to date the thing up, fortunately, and so on, because you're into such vast spans of time that it's fantastic. Now, we've carried this guy from his PTP that went back to yesterday when his boss didn't look kindly at him, who really can't remember what he had for breakfast, who has asked for a tolerance of this and that, and whose life cuts in at about at the age of 12 or 13. If you pushed him real hard, if a psychoanalyst had pushed him real hard and worked for 4 or 5 years, he would have gotten him to remember when he was 10. This boy, we pushed him up by gradients to greater spans of time, greater concepts of thought, greater concepts about life and the universe around him, until his tolerance, as far as processing is concerned, in time alone, just, well, today, say, well, trillions 200, that GPM's back there, trillions 200. All right, so it's back there, trillions 200, see? There's no gawp about that. See, reality, familiarity. Well, you'd tie a whole session around a telegraph pole if you said to this fellow, all right, now what we're going to run on you, Joe, we're going to run on you. This fellow is the kind of fellow who is, it worries him that he can't remember what he had for breakfast. You see, if you can't remember what you had for breakfast, that's one thing. If you worry about it, that's something else. and this guy, and we say, now what were you doing in the 14th century? You're just going to spend the rest of the session, you see, trying to get around this unreality and his grappling with it. You're not going to get any auditing done. See, you've hit him with too much unreality. He can't meet with that whatsoever. So he goes out of A with you, because the R is out, don't you see? He'll go out of C with you, and so on. Well, that's true of this whole scale. So this is technical scale. And this takes those gradients of processes, which I have learned by experience over the past 13 years, that a case normally follows through. They'd be willing to talk to somebody about their troubles, and then with assist, they're willing to have somebody touch them or something like this in order to square up some minor illness. They'll talk on specific questions, R1C. They'll answer specific subject matter. You're not giving a repetitive questionnaire. You're just telling them, tell me all you can about marriage or something. You know, what solutions have you had? Something like that. Comes up to a point where they can actually be disciplined and follow through and be alert enough to follow through repetitive processes, CCHs, straight wire, do these various things. Will actually be able to answer up to prep checking and e-meter, decisions of change, can get up to a point of recognizing when ARC breaks are ARC breaks and what they come from and what missed withholds are all about and what all these various concepts responsibility are, and particularly that they are doing things to make people wrong And there's difference of case, responses that they themselves are doing. Then we give them the idea of whole track and they've been here for a long time. Then we move them up to the fact that, doggone it, they did it all themselves. Let's let them get their belly full of motivators. Five. See. You find a guy can only be run on implant GPMs for 2 or 3 months, and he just gets his belly full. He finally begins to figure out, well, how could this really have aberrated me? I know it was uncomfortable, but what's this all about? And so forth. And we had students around here protesting about it and so on. So it was all done to us. No, it couldn't have been, see. Here was a violent protest and so forth. Well, that was plenty of time to move out onto actual GPMs. Now, of course, we have an additional level there. Well, what's this old Route 1 and other drills? Well, that's proper and right conduct for an operating thetan. And we've had lots of drills for this particular character. They'd probably be different drills today. They'd be a little smarter and avoid some of the rocks and shoals of the drills of yesterday. But I remember we used to have change of space drills. We had one time two skulls. I think those two skulls are still stored in Washington. And they just get the guy used to it. And he'd be in skull A, skull B, you see. Be in skull A, skull B, and so forth. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Well, if a guy was pulled down, really, because of his actual GPMs and all his caseload that could key in, you really can't do those things until you got the guy's case practically gone. Whether any of those are really necessary or not is a point in question. I know that if I'm outside and an auditor will just let me itza for a while, that's just about the only thing I require on the thing. Let me find my feet, quote unquote, feet. Let me orient myself. Let me get over a queasy idea that I might not be able to hold this position in space. All right, now the whole problem, as far as we're concerned, is that of dissemination, practice, smooth processing, forward progress, and keeping the road open keeping the bridge up behind us, don't you see? How does anybody else ever travel this road? That's one of the problems. And how does one travel this road best? And what is the easiest procedure of dissemination? What's the easiest way to take this on? And so on. Well, obviously, it would be to insist that somebody didn't outstrip his training level with his processing level, because he's sooner or later going to come a cropper. He goes up above his training level too high, and the further he goes, although it isn't noticeable at one grade, by the time it's gotten two grades, it starts to be noticeable, and then he all of a sudden gets up somewhere around five or six, and he practically spins in. It's just not anything that he could consistently make. A lot of auditors, by being very clever, I'm sure here or there, can get a person at higher levels, a person at lower levels, to sit still for processes of higher levels, and by carefully holding the breath for the PC and so forth, get the PC over certain hurdles in order to get them up to a case gain, and then I'm sure that here and there it'll be done successfully. But in many cases, after they've gone to all this trouble, they found out that the guy just stepped over to the on the back track and went below where they had been. They were running at a level that was too high for them to attain, way beyond their reality, and they were just being propitiative. So there's a lot of questions like that. But what interests us is how do you keep the road open? How do you keep people coming up the line? And how do you guarantee that a person can make it? See? Now, that's another problem. We're not talking now about the possibility of somebody making it. We're talking about guaranteeing that somebody can make it. Let's take the economics of the situation. They're very much pertinent on this particular planet, this particular time. The number of hours of processing between level 0 and level 7 are very hard to estimate. Very, very hard to estimate, but the number of hours of processing, I don't know. 2,000? You make a guess. 1,500? I don't know. I wouldn't know. That's a lot of hours of processing. Now multiply it by $10. However many it is, multiply it by the very cheap rate of $10. Completely aside from the fact that the guy couldn't buy his way all the way through without being trained, he would never make it, don't you see? The economics that he is being presented with here, the economic picture, is inequitable. How many hours of processing could he buy for the training fees involved? Well, if all the training fees, this is wild guesswork, I'm not having added anything up and so forth. Supposing all the training fees and processing odd bits and other things added up in the line, supposing these things all came together and added up to $5,000 or $6,000, supposing you could get all that line. I don't say if this is the correct figure, might be more, might be less. That's $5,000 or $6,000. I'm trying to give you comparative figures, you see, compared to perhaps $20,000. Well, immediately that you decrease the economic, the cost of the thing, of course you make it more possible to make this line. All right, now let's see if we couldn't decrease this further in various ways. And I think this could be done on the basis of bringing this schedule of courses up along the line, and each course requiring that the earlier course have been well done. Then, of course, these courses would be briefer, and you would have a less costly situation. You see how that would work out. But he would get an unlimited amount of processing, and he would also make it. He would get as much processing as he himself was expert enough to keep his co-auditor. That's practically the technical definition of how much processing somebody gets. Processing, his own processing, got to be good enough to keep his co-auditor. And then your processing always got to be good enough to run your own sessions out of your co-auditor, if it's straight co-auditor. A certain amount of skill. That is to say, his auditing you, you've got to be able to audit what his auditing of you did to him, you see, or what he said it did. Now you've got to, it's in your vast interest to keep picking up his overts against you as an auditor, you see. Your sessions will get very smooth. Various lines, completely aside from that, do show us then that it is more economic. The figures I gave you, just so that you can see the point, you see. It's more economical to co-audit along the line. It is also only possible if it is co-audited up along the line, because the levels of training are necessary to attain the levels of K's. So the only possibility of getting up the line is more economical to do so. Furthermore, now, the reality level of advance is cared for, which cares for dissemination. Now, if any HPA could train and issue the HAS certificate by application to the central organization, to the person he trained, and actually issue a classification 1 to that person, and so forth. This would give him a co-audit area that he could cope with, that he could cope with one way or the other. Now, we've never been very successful in individual auditors training up cases at what is now given as level 2. We've never been too successful at that. It's very spotty. The results have really not been able to, because the individual auditor really does not have the facilities to enforce a tight schedule and handle the situation. So that has not been too good. So therefore, that course would have to be given in some district or area and would have to be short and to the point, but very effective as a course, and shouldn't be too terribly expensive in order to get that course. It should be within the finite limits of 30 days, because almost anybody can get 30 days off, but you ask them to get off much more. Well, that's an awful lot to ask somebody to get in 30 days. Well, it would all actually depend on how well they were trained at level one, how fast they could go through the upper course. Now, you see, we are away, because any auditor who had sent somebody out to get something like that could expand a little bit further. It wouldn't be that they would necessarily come back and do it all themselves, but it would come back into a zone or area, then you would have a broader level of co-audit in progress. That's what it would in actual fact amount to. You'd be co-auditing at higher levels. And it could move on up that way, and a whole district or zone could move on up in that particular wise. Now, if every one of these levels had its own textbook or textbook with its question and answer sheets, so that everybody knew exactly what was required of him at that particular level, and all the data was there for that particular level, and the examinations were all there, and the examinations were particularized enough so that they were, you had to really know the stuff in order to pass them, this would make very little randomity in moving up the line. That's another point that has to be taken care of. That job falling mostly on the back of my neck, I absolutely shudder at, because it means, my God, I've got to rewrite about 13 years of work into simple textbook form. Cost us a lot of our Scientologies, but it is actually not to our interest to cut down too much on the esoterics of Scientologies into the upper levels. It's only to our interest to cut them out in the lower levels. Because there are many things we've discovered in the mind that nobody has any word for except us. We can simplify, then, on the broad public front, the wording and usages of Scientologies as a language, you see, but and preserving the necessary points, still get a simplification as we go up along the line. But there are certain things you can't simplify. You start calling an actual GPM, you start calling that in too much English, and you use an English word of some kind or another for a GPM, and you've just about had it. What you want is a symbol that is not restimulative of the wording of goals or items. It has a lot to do with it. Anyway, however that is, somebody now is in this position. He's out here in the street. He hears about Scientology. So he goes around, and he understands there's an auditor there, and he has some meetings on Friday night or something like that, and he decides he'd go along. He's heard from Bill or something. And he goes along there. He sees a chart up on the wall of where he's supposed to go. This tells him at once that there is some place to go, that there is a way to get there. And if various states of arrived beingness are described with great reality on this chart and so on, he frankly won't look at the upper levels of the chart. They won't interest him. He will be mostly looking at the immediately adjacent interests of the chart, you see. And he say those are a good thing to have. And this is all he has to do. And this is all he has to study. And this is his practice and activity, and it's on this schedule and that sort of thing. And that shows him that he can move from that point on forward. The road, then, is not blocked out, because he sees that every time he gets at one of these points, he can then take off to the next point, similarly informed and equipped. Furthermore, he's not being limited by fantastic sums of money being required of him for processing. He's being asked for enough money to finance training, but he is not, and he's usually perfectly willing to give that, by the way. He then realizes he's buying an unlimited amount of training to get through the processes of these particular levels and move on forward. Well, by restimulating a lot of co-audit, getting a lot of co-audit going in areas, and making central organizations concentrate on this and show auditors where they fail by not getting co-audit groups going, then a central organization itself comes over onto training mainly for its income line. It actually runs more courses than it did previously, more levels of course, and any HCC activity is basically patch-up activity resulting from co-ordinate areas. Now, there hasn't been any success whatsoever, any fast success of dissemination or broad knowledge in the idea of a private professional practitioner who grabbed guys off the street, laid them on the couch, and ejected them out the front door. I want to call this to your attention, that this is not, in spite of the fact we have one or two guys, a few guys in Scientology, been absolute geniuses at this, and have made very good forward progress, but this has not been the picture of the whole at all. This bloke who does this is following a pattern laid down by earlier healing professions. We don't happen to be healing professions, so we're out of order to accept this particular zone. Now, what's the score here? What's the score? You're immediately, you have figures. You immediately have figures here before you. It took the medical profession over 100 years to get anywhere with that system. It's taken the chiropractor, naturopaths, the homeopaths, the osteopaths, almost equivalent lengths of time, and they're not really making it. Look at this as a healing profession activity. You look at the amount of time it's taken them to get off a launching pad, and why, just now the American Medical Association getting up to a point where they have something to do with public opinion in the United States. And they're doing it for the rather unworthy reason of just getting a few more quick bucks into their pocket. These boys took a long time. These fellows were a long way on the road. So that is obviously not a fast system. Just looking at the comparative statistics, we say then there is something wrong with this picture. We have this Freudian analyst who has an office in the Ritz building and who gets a couple of patients in every day and listens to them and so forth. This picture is not a successful dissemination picture. It happens to be the only picture in the society that anybody is complaining about. The medicos, it took them 100 years to make it, and they're not going to let anybody else make it. They can possibly help it. They know how tough it is. They're gonna scuff the track up in front of us. They're gonna push us around in order to get that quick buck and the monopoly, don't you see? Well, we don't belong in their field. We have nothing to do with them at all. And so I don't think that pattern, which is so well adapted to what is their highest level of pride? Oh, letting blood. Yes, they bleed people these days. They're the fellows that have those barber poles that go out. No, that's some other profession. Anyway, all joking aside, they have not been successful because they are all poised for the final kickover. They were seized 100% in England by the government. In the United States, they will be in the near future. Socialized medicine is certainly going to be there. The big insurance companies of Canada and so on have all of their chips down on the fact that all medical healing in the United States will become socialized within the next 5 years. Well, that'll be an adequate stop to any forward movement, that no matter what their forward movement might have been. And it looks to me, and has for some time, that is not a successful pattern. Furthermore, the society only complains about central organizations when they engage in public processing, getting the guy off the street and straightening up something with him. Then they have an objection to this because it's in the line of that. They have also an objection to a private practitioner. Let me show you here that if this system is followed, you realize that anybody who becomes a pre-clear has to become a member of the club. Therefore, anything that's happening to him, he has a right to try to help do something about if he doesn't like it. He isn't just at the total effect point. And he's moving on forward, and he has some responsibility for the general forward progress of the Scientology movement. Makes a different picture. Now, the Senate anti-American activity. I mean, the Senate Anti-American Committee. I think that's one of their principal functions. American organizations and so forth have to be stamped out. Now, you see, we mustn't have them. Organization never hired a communist in his life, blacklisted. You know, they're going crazier and crazier. You're seeing government go goofier and goofier. Now these boys come up on an investigatory level, see, and they want to talk about this terrible movement, Scientology. They're doing these poor little poverty-stricken doctors out of their horrible things. You knock them over in a minute. You knock them over in a minute with another plan of dissemination. You say, well, as far as I know, the only thing that's ever gotten us into trouble with the press or with governments or anything is because part of our plan of dissemination, which fortunately for us was our most unsuccessful part of our dissemination activities, paralleled that of the poor, downtrodden medical doctor who must be protected, you see. Now, the government itself gets the idea of somebody trying to influence the public at large. They have another entirely different angle on this. They get some idea of somebody treating members of the public. This makes him a sort of a public activity. But look, I'll call to your attention that in every area and state in the world, there is this idea of the private club. They have many privileges. The idea of the private club, the idea of the private activity. This fellow is a member of the club, so he can buy drinks at hours which are not legal in any public pub, you see. There's all kinds of privileges associated here with the privacy of an activity. Well, of course, it doesn't seem to occur to them that the member of the public becoming a Scientologist, the member of the public becoming only a preclear, is pretty hard to draw in our particular instance. But it does tend to wipe out forward randomity. We're now running into randomity. We've got such things as a Victorian Parliament. They got the straw out of their teeth long enough to utter asininities on the subject of what is this Scientology, and are now having some kind of investigation on the subject down there in Victoria State. That's a state parliament down there. They don't amount to anything. I was fascinated by their summons to the inquiry. It's inquiring after the corporation which has never done any business in Australia. It wants all the papers of this corporation which has never done any business in Australia. It just happens to be one of the Scientology corporations. They haven't even got the right corporation, in other words. They're adrift, man. Of course, I have no objection to these attacks, so long as they continue to attack along lines in which they will inevitably lose. See, the FDA attacking us for healing people with an e-meter, hooking it up to people and saying their cancer will now be cured because we have turned the meter on them. See? That's what they actually are charging us. So long as they bring attacks along that line, perfectly all right with me, because we win them. We'll win all these attacks one way or the other. God help the Victorian State Parliament. I used to look at the HCO exec down there occasionally. She got an interested look across the street. You see, it's right across the street from Hazy. And she say, well, we'll own that place one of these days. And it's already begun. They are the people who did enough overt now. And, of course, they'll run for cover like a bunch of startled quail. But if their investigation starts by investigating a corporation which has never done any business in Australia as the corporation they should investigate, well, it gives you an idea of it, see? And they're investigating things that don't exist and so on. We don't care much about this type of activity except as it takes it out of me and muddies up the lines and takes it out of a SOC sex and HCO sex around the world. They manage to hold the fort. They really don't do us a lot of harm. But if it stepped up to this particular point at this particular time, we have just now gotten a complete cycle of research here. What's going to happen because of this is, of course, gruesome. because this will make a vast difference in its own right. But everybody's gotten terribly interested in Scientology. Newspapers are saying to us now, oh, of course, anything that happens in Scientology is news. Well, of course, what they consider news these days is bad news. And we're not terribly fascinated with being treated this way. But we'd better not, this isn't necessarily why we would put out this policy letter. I'm just showing you that it does happen to have an advantage in that direction, too. Now, I've examined this from all fronts. The only criticisms I have with it, it sure does make an awful lot of certificates. It's lots of certificates. But I call to your attention that these certificates are, most of them, extant. They have at one time or another actually been issued or used. And these certificates are an effort to handle the situation. Somebody completes a course but doesn't get his classification. At least give him something for the course. You'll find this continuously operates as a problem in handling courses and so forth. You'd be surprised how much upset you get if you don't do this. Therefore, the certificate does not carry the rights of the class. At no time here does the certificate designate or carry the right of the class. These are just an afterthought. The classification is carried by the Roman numeral, and only the Roman numeral, regardless on what certificate it occurs. So someday you may see the oddity, because HGA was given away years and years ago, you may see an HGA with a class 2 on it. Sounds wild, but and a lot of administrative randomity can be kicked up along this way. But it's actually the class they have made. And if they are studying for the next class, they may do the processes of that class if they already have in their hands, you couldn't train anything unless you did this, unless they already have in their hands the level of their last class. They must have the level of their last class, may therefore do the processes of the next class while actually being trained for that class. While actually being trained for that class, see? Because this breakdown will stand that much strain, but may not do the next class. See? It can only move one above. If they haven't gotten a classification, let us say, they've got a class 3, and they haven't gotten their 4 classification, but have been trained for 4, and then they go on to try to take a course for 5. Can't do it. Because in the first place, there's something must be wrong back here with their case, or something like that. Something must be wrong with a basic understanding not to be able to get a class. So that's, something must be missing here someplace, you see. And you'd throw the whole thing askew again if you permitted a guy just to go on up training for each class up and doing the process of that class because he was training for it and become idiocy. But you have to allow the next class to be trained from the class award actually given. Now, the question came up, what about class 0 and class 1? Well, of course, that's the only one where you have this condition. And that's because it is class 0, because you haven't got a Scientologist yet. And therefore, you say class 0, you're actually not saying very much. This class has to be double, if you take a good, bold look at it. You've got the person who is being trained for an HAS certificate. You have to consider him a class of some kind or another, considering class 0 striking for an HAS certificate, and then there's your HAS certificate classed, because there had to be a certificate before you could get a class. Now, that condition doesn't ever occur again. The person from that time on has always got some kind of a certificate to put a class on. I mean, it's as elementary and as stupid as this particular thing. There's no other ramification about class 0 and class 1 both coming under HAS. It has no other meaning than that. Of course, you call this person a class 0 because he's taking a course for an HAS, don't you see? Now, this permits, however, a basic public release textbook to be issued at the level of Class Zero, which doesn't really contain the classification materials for HAS and Class One. It's just public stuff, one way or the other. Dissemination material. All right, not to labor the point too much, I can tell you right now that there are cases all over paleontology who are parked because they skipped some of these levels or haven't got things squared away at one or another of these levels of processing. And they've tried to leap with seven-league boots into the rare and stratified air of upper-level processes when they are still desperately worried about the fact that water every now and then looks awfully green when it comes out of a faucet, but they really can't ever see that it is green, don't you see? And they're worried about such things as visual perception or what is the environment all about. Something to be solved almost at once with the CCHs, don't you see? And yet somebody's trying to run them on implant GPMs or something like this, see? Oh, brother. Now, that stretch of unreality accounts for lack of forward advance. And if an individual in Scientology doesn't feel that his case is advancing, and he is advancing, then somewhere along this line, and this schedule is laid out fairly precisely, he has dropped the ball at one of these levels. That level has never been flattened on him as a case. That contains things that he is still desperately worried about. Now, it's all very well to say that only in the upper levels do you get a real resolution of the case. That's true. But how do you get past the camouflage and the nonsense of the PTPs and upsets of present time in order to get through the case, in order to relieve the things which are the real trouble with the case? It is very true that the real trouble with the case lie at level 6. These all lie at level 6. And it's also very true that you've got no chance whatsoever to get to them because there are too many other things wrong already that lie on the top of them. The unreality of the situation is such that no one can ever get to these. So the anxiety of some auditor to get the most, see, get the biggest effect on the PC, you know, do the most for the PC, you see, takes this little kid who is awfully worried every time his mother leaves the room and tries to run an actual GPM on him. See? He isn't going to make it. The other point, the only other point I'd like to make, is I think this reduces the amount of danger, the amount of upset, the amount of randomity connected with processing results. And I'm terribly interested in that. Well, I've given you a lot of data here one way or the other. I've tried to give you my viewpoints with regard to this. And I hope they've been of some assistance in this matter. Thank you.